The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Well, finally, someone else is warning that arming Germany may not be such a good idea. You've heard that warning here at thetrumpet.com or at our website, thetrumpet.com, and here on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You've heard it. If you're familiar with his writings, you've heard it from Herbert Armstrong for decades. And now there's an opinion piece over at EU Observer. Should Europeans spend more on defense? We've linked to it at the top of our website there in the headlines box, The Dark Side to European Military Spending. We retitled it for you. But go and make sure you read that piece today. As I say, it's linked right at the top of thetrumpet.com. It talks about some of the things we've reported here on the show over the last couple of weeks. James Mattis, his meeting with the Secretary of Defense, his meeting with EU leaders last week, I believe it was, and him urging them to pay their fair share into NATO's defense fund for the member states to each pay 2%, and that the United States, U.S. taxpayers can't be expected to finance this operation. Well, you look at some of the other headlines together with the piece I'll quote from here in just a second. All the news coming out of the Munich Security Conference over last weekend. Another one here from the National. Europe needs to pull its weight if the West is to survive. And some of these we've touched on in recent programs. There was news yesterday or the day before about Germany expanding the Bundeswehr to 200,000 troops. It's just a few thousand more over the next few years, so it seems like an underwhelming development in some respects. But when you consider the direction that Germany and so many of those European states have been going in, and now it's all turning around and going in the other direction, where they're starting to expand their militaries and to grow their armies. These are the kinds of headlines that we're seeing now routinely. Again, you can look at it and say, oh, well, the United States still spends more. The United States spends 3.6% of its GDP on military spending or on defense. But put it all together. I mean, put all of the member states in Europe, in NATO, together. And what can happen, as I said the other day, what can happen in even just a couple of years' time? Once the focus shifts, once the United States is out of the picture. And here again, who has been warning of this for decades? This EU Observer piece, as I say, it's linked to at the top of the trumpet.com. Make sure that you read that at the Trumpet website. Today, should Europeans spend more on defense? It says here there is a dark side to a hypothetical beefing up of Europe's militaries. America's dominance of NATO and Europe's apparent free riding has brought one significant benefit. Namely, there's been a taming of the regional rivalries that had long existed between European countries and had periodically devastated the continent. Okay, so the United States has prevented this from happening again. This long history of rivalry and conflict and war on the continent. It says if land warfare between Europe's democracies has been unthinkable, this is to say that it is unthinkable primarily in the literal, practical sense. There's no capacity to fight any such war. Not enough men in uniforms, tanks, guns, or airplanes. I mean, if it seemed unlikely, war in Europe, that is, it's because these nations in Europe, they don't have much of a military. They don't have the men in uniforms. They don't have the tanks and the guns and the airplanes. I mean, for the longest time, as we've been covering over and again the last couple weeks, it was the United States security umbrella that maintained the peace on this historically war-torn continent. That's just a fact of history. We'll look more at that here in just a second. But the EU Observer, this opinion piece goes on and says, a Europe that takes care of its own security without free riding, quote unquote, on the United States would likely see traditional rivalries return. Okay, so a Europe left to itself, it's going to see these traditional rivalries return. For instance, by bringing its defense spending a bit above 2% of GDP, Germany would outspend Russia and become the fourth largest military power in the world. So just like that, you say 2%'s not that much? It is a lot when you consider the size of Germany's economy. And just like that, if it just brings it up to 2%, then already it's the fourth largest military in the world, or the military power. The EU Observer says here, there are some good reasons to believe that this would not be a good thing. There are, in fact, quite a few good reasons to believe that a Germany with the fourth largest military in the world would not be a good thing. Yet, it says, it's far from obvious as to whether Germany's neighbors and partners in Europe would be thrilled by this prospect. I mean, there's a few. You know, we've mentioned that leader or that politician in Poland that's called for Germany to step it up militarily. But there have to be quite a few others, Germany's neighbors, I mean, that, as he brings out here, would be less than thrilled by this development. And then he brings up another it's in some ways an obvious point, but it's a profound one too. Think about the tensions already existing in the EU. Think about that. Again, you have the mixture, the iron and clay mixture, Daniel 2. Think about the tensions that are already there, the differences, the divisions, the strife, the bickering. It says some have blamed Germany, rightly or wrongly, for imposing austerity on economies in the Eurozone's Mediterranean periphery. Central European countries such as Hungary or Slovakia in turn soured to Britain's leadership following Chancellor Angela Merkel's welcome extended to Syrian asylum seekers in September 2015. So he highlights some of the tensions and then says these disputes might have been heated, but they were still largely amicable. But what would the standoff over Greek debt or the EU's asylum policies look like if Germany were not just an economic powerhouse, but also wielded real military might? Well, that's a game changer, in other words. What would these disputes look like if Germany's not only the economic dominant power, but also if it had the military might to back it up? How would it shape the country's relations with the Czech Republic, which expelled 2.5 million ethnic Germans from the Sudetenland after World War II? And what about with Poland? It's just bringing up some fairly recent history. Nobody's suggesting that a Germany that spends 2% of its GDP on defense would become a threat to its neighbors. Well, this is the same article. In fact, he just suggested it in the paragraph above this. In any event, you don't want to go too far. I mean, you can't be too extreme now. You can't say that if Germany were to rearm, they would actually be a military threat to their neighbors. In fact, that's what he's implying all the way through this article. But at least you have to give him credit for, as I say, sounding somewhat of an alarm that few others are willing to sound. This is the dark side of European military spending. This is the hot topic of discussion in Europe right now. How much should we spend? How big of a military should it be? How many armaments do we need? And do we even need a nuclear deterrent? These are in all the major discussions in Europe right now. He continues here, but a more powerful Germany would almost certainly make other European countries, some of which dislike the country's real or imagined domination of the EU, more nervous. I mean, they're already dominating the EU. And so what would some of their neighbors, Germany's neighbors, what would they think of Germany's newfound military might on top of its economic dominance? It could induce them, that's speaking of the neighbors, to form new alliances, including with illiberal and revisionist regimes, most prominently Russia. And then it alludes again to some important history here. Europe holds an almost limitless list of contested territories. Did you realize that? There's an almost limitless list of contested territories. Look, we saw it in the 1990s. During the Balkans crisis, a limitless list of contested territories, expulsions of ethnic groups, and other historic grievances. And they remember these nations. They remember, but nearly all have been dormant for decades. I mean, they've remained under the surface because you had a dominant United States and all of these European nations, with hardly any men in uniform, hardly any military equipment, no weapons to speak of. I mean, they haven't been warring with one another because they don't have the capacity to do it. All of that's about to change. It says that period coincides, well, the period that it's been dormant, that period coincides with America's dominant position within NATO and its investment into Europe's multilateral political infrastructure, which has grown into the form of today's EU. And so, as we've been saying over and again, that whole union was set up for the purpose of keeping America in, keeping Russia out, and keeping Germany down. Why aren't there more leaders speaking up about this history? I mean, all of that is changing dramatically. 3 years ago, we had the Trumpet cover, a memorable cover, What Happens After a Superpower Dies. Life in the post-American world. It's just like I was bringing out on Monday's show. All of these headlines that we're seeing, we could run Monday's show and just produce new content. We could run that same theme practically every day now. Now here comes the EU Observer saying what we've been saying for decades. What happens when a superpower dies? What happens when America's removed from the scene? Well, we're seeing it happen. What happens when America's no longer dominating NATO? In that issue, by the way, that January 2014 Trumpet with the cover, What Happens After a Superpower Dies, there's an article within that issue by Richard Palmer about the world's next superpower. We'll have to post that from the archives. That's another feature, by the way, that we've added to thetrumpet.com. We want to bring to your attention some of the things that we've been saying for years and years and years. There was one up just the other day that I quoted from on Monday's show. What we were saying about NATO back in 1999. And as we said at the top of the article, I mean, the content of that article is just as relevant today as it was 19 years ago or 18 years ago. Europe's new policeman. Go and read it. It's the fourth or fifth story at thetrumpet.com right now. But here's another one. We'll need to repost. The world's next superpower. It's the three-year-old article. It's from January 2014. And notice this important history. This is from Richard Palmer. The 100-year period from 1815 until World War I began in 1914. So you've got a century here that you can look at, a snapshot of European history. This was one of Europe's greatest periods of peace ever, Richard writes. But consider what happened during these years. France invaded Spain. Russia fought Turkey. Various German states fought with Denmark. This is during the 1800s. Austria and France, Britain and Turkey fought Russia, and Greece fought Turkey. Those are just the highlights, Richard writes. And they don't include the numerous internal conflicts, uprisings, declarations of independence, and other political unrest that occurred. Even Switzerland had a civil war. He says here, that's what peace, quote unquote, that's what peace in Europe looked like before the latter half of the 20th century. That's what it looked like. Look, there's a limitless list of contested territories, expulsions of ethnic groups, going back to that EU Observer piece, and other historic grievances. It just goes on and on and on. And here's what was happening in the 100 years before World War I. And then you had World War I. And then you had a short recess. And then you had World War II. World War I, by the way, was supposed to end all wars. And then you had the short recess. And then you had World War II. And then you've had another recess. It's a little bit longer. That's true. But all that it is a recess. Just like Mr. Armstrong said, Herbert Armstrong said on his old radio program. We played this for you, I think, 8 or 10 days ago. But here it is again, clip two.
Then the wars, and we've had wars and wars and wars up till now. But the biggest war is yet to come. It was finally to climax in World War, and we're in a recess right now. Now, mark you what I said. I said we're in a recess between World War II and World War III. And World War III is just around the corner. And let me tell you that the weapons now exist for the first time in history when man can destroy mankind. When all human life can be erased from this planet. When we can be blasted out of existence. And the greatest problem in the world today, our number one problem, is that of human survival.
That is the greatest problem that we're facing. What a shame. It's such a great article, the EU Observer piece. And then he qualifies it right in the middle. Nobody's suggesting that Germany that spends 2% of its GDP on defense would become a threat. Oh, no. Oh, no. In fact, that's exactly what this article is suggesting. And that's exactly what your Bible prophesies. And that's exactly the lesson of history. Winston Churchill knew this in the period leading up to World War II. He believed that history teaches us that a strong, militaristic Germany is always dangerous, period. Period. Now, I know people today, they're going to say, well, we've moved beyond that. We've moved beyond that. I mean, this is the period of globalism. Everything's interconnected. And we're more educated. We're more sophisticated. There's no way that something like that could ever happen again. Well, like Mr. Armstrong said in that piece I just played, I mean, here we have now, this time around, we've got nuclear weapons all over the earth, including a lot in Europe, certainly in Russia, in China. And all of these areas now are building up their militaries. Look at the direction. And mark, as he said there, mark what he said, Herbert Armstrong, mark what he said. We're in a recess. And be reminded of the lesson, one of the most important lessons of history. Richard Palmer, in that piece from 3 years ago, he said, Europe's history since World War II has been unprecedented. Okay, since World War II ended, there has been an unprecedented period of peace and security. I mean, but this is unusual. That's what we need to understand. This is not normal. To have an American policeman, the lone superpower, providing that security blanket over Europe. This is highly unusual, just looking at the history of Europe. It says the continent that had held the world's most advanced and deadly armies for hundreds of years was suddenly playing third fiddle to two superpowers. This is after World War II, he means. America and the Soviet Union. In that environment, the United States made a simple bargain with Western Europe. You no longer need to maintain a world-class army. Instead, we'll protect you. This deal helped bring an extraordinary level of stability and tranquility to a part of the world that has repeatedly convulsed with astonishing violence and destruction throughout its history. This has been the lesson of European history. Repeatedly convulsed with astonishing violence and destruction. That's the lesson. This is what's happened over and again. Are we sure we want to rearm Germany? It says now, however, this unusual era is coming to an end. That's what we were saying. That's what we've said all along. And Richard reminded our Trumpet audience of that in 2014. As we head into the post-American era, it is Europe that is picking up the mantle of the leader of the free world. And now you're seeing headlines that are actually saying that, particularly with the election of Donald Trump. We've given you those headlines on this program. This is an article from 3 years ago at thetrumpet.com, years before Donald Trump ever came along, certainly a year and a half or so before he announced his candidacy. Europe's picking up the mantle. Stepping out of America's shadow, Richard writes. And isn't that the truth? We told you this was coming. It's based on the sure word of Bible prophecy. The seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Yes, indeed, Europe's stepping out of America's shadow. And there's two general reactions. At least there were in 2014. There may be more enthusiastic support for it today, given what's happened more recently. Support for the, well, it's about time reaction. It's about time that we step out of America's shadow and take the lead ourselves. And Richard writes here, then there's others who take a different view, saying that Europe is a spent force, a continent of wimps, and so on, afraid to take any real action, incapable of carrying on where America has left off. Well, there's a lot more now that believe Europe is fully capable, and America itself is urging the continent. 2% for each member state? What would that represent? There's only like three or four states that are even contributing that to their militaries. If everyone started paying the 2%, we've played those clips before by Herbert Armstrong. You know, the ones where it says you bring them all together, you've got hundreds of millions of people in Europe. You've got a lot of thriving economies right now anyway, at least Germany and some others. A few are struggling, of course, but And it will be an economic trigger, no doubt, that really sets things into fast pace. In any event, notice what Richard says later on in this piece. True, Europe has been peaceful in the American-dominated world of the second half of the 20th century, but go back to World War II and before. Its past loudly trumpets that this is an extreme exception. That's what this is. What we've experienced from 1945 to today in Europe. And really, when I say today, I mean you have to go back really before what happened there in the 1990s with the Balkans. Because you take away, I mean, right away, you saw the conflict. Those things that the EU Observer brings out. The fact that there's this limitless list of grievances between states. Between ethnicities, between religions. And we saw it right away there with the Balkans. But for the most part, you had the last half of the 20th century, a relative peaceful time. a relatively stable time in Europe. But this, as he brings out, it was an extreme exception. It says, with America out of the way, all the factors that have kept Europe at peace will be gone. That's what we said 3 years ago. You take America out of the way and all the factors that have kept Europe at peace will be gone. Why aren't there more leaders in Europe, in the United States even? Especially in the United States. Especially in Britain, given the history. Why aren't there more sounding this alarm? It says, and for the first time in 70 years, Europe will have unmitigated authorization to conduct itself as a major military power. That's what's coming. And we've been preparing you for this. It says, there are many. Notice how he concludes here. This is the last bit of Richard's piece. This was at thetrumpet.com 3 years ago. The World's Next Superpower, it's titled. There are many for whom the idea of Europe reverting to militaristic type is unthinkable. You see, it just can't happen. This is not going to happen again. History will not repeat itself. That has been mankind's stubborn legacy. He says they believe the world today, particularly Europe, has become far too civilized, perhaps even complacent and lethargic, for such a thing to occur. This is a common delusion. Throughout history, man, listen to this. Listen to this paragraph. Listen to this history. He says, throughout history, mankind has believed that we have solved war forever. He's believed that. And there's many that believe it today. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The reports, the statistics, the wars, we think we've solved the problem. We think we're sophisticated now. There's a piece in Deutsche Welle, by the way, that says in the world, or in 2016, the world became a darker place, and it just goes through this report from Amnesty International, giving you all the lowlights of the awful year that was, the war crimes committed across the world, global powers failing to rise up to meet these challenges or to bring solutions. That Deutsche Welle piece says, it quotes the Amnesty International report saying the world in 2016 became a darker and more unstable place. That's the truth. That's the truth. Amnesty documented grave violations of human rights in 159 countries in 2016. 159 countries. Grave violations of human rights. And yet still, people are, particularly in the West, in the prosperous Western nations, they're convinced that we've solved the problem of war. Richard Palmer writes here, before Napoleon, professional armies were said to have made war so destructive that it had become obsolete. That was before Napoleon. Before World War I, global commerce, international agreements, and an increase in culture and sophistication supposedly meant war was history. And then the war came, World War I. And after that war, what was it called? The war to end all wars. Surely, surely after that, that would be the end of war. And it was. For how long? How long was the recess? What, barely 22, 23 years, if that? And in the grand scheme of things, if the recess between the Second War, the Second World War, and the Third One is 70 or 75 or 80 years, whatever it is that really that long of a recess? Look at the history. I said earlier, Winston Churchill, he was a student of history, and he believed that a strong Germany, a strong militaristic Germany, is a dangerous Germany. He brought that out in his book on World War I, The World Crisis. Churchill warned in that book about the very same weakness that we see in man today. The thinking that, well, civilization has come so far, we've climbed above such perils of world war. They argued that, this is from Churchill's writings, the interdependence of nations and trade and traffic, the sense of public law, the Hague Convention, liberal principles, the Labor Party, high finance, Christian charity, common sense, have rendered such nightmares impossible. That's what they argued. That's what they argued. Before World War I, and then again before World War II. And Churchill's response was to ask, are you quite sure? Are you quite sure it would be a pity to be wrong? Such a mistake could only be made once. Once for all. Think about all the nuclear weapons that have proliferated all over the earth. If you make the mistake once, if you make it just once, that's it. It's over. Now, you think about that lesson of history and add to that what the Bible says, what Bible prophecy warns about Europe's military and economic might. Bible prophecy warns of one final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. Let me take you back to this piece at the EU Observer. Should Germany rearm? That's the question that this particular journalist poses. Should Europeans spend more on defense? We've linked to it at the top of our trumpet.com website, the dark side to European military spending. Make sure you set aside some time today and read that short opinion piece at the EU Observer. It says here, if Europeans are to spend more on defense, they need to be careful to do it in a way that does not resuscitate the continent's old demons. That made me think of Brad McDonald's piece. I quoted from it just the other day. 2 years old now. November 2015 trumpet. He wrote about Europe's old demons returning. And this EU Observer piece says, if they're going to build up their military, it better be done in a way that it doesn't resuscitate the continent's old demons. Those demons, in the literal sense, by the way, those demons are still around. The ones that infested the area of Samaria during the first century when Simon Magus was there bewitching the people, as it says in Acts 8. My father, in his book, A True History, or The True History of the True Church, he talks about how that those demons are still around. Revelation 12 makes that clear. They're still around. They're still working. In fact, they're confined to the earth. Here's the EU Observer talking about Europe's old demons. Brad McDonald's piece from 2 years ago talked about what the refugee crisis, the impact that the refugee crisis would have ultimately on Europe. The fact that Europe would shed the post-war veneer and return to its past. It would shed that post-war veneer, the peaceable, no militaries. It's all about togetherness and unity, stability, prosperity. It's shedding that post-war veneer, and it's returning to its past. The EU Observer goes on and says, that leaves European democracies with only one option, to pursue defense and security policies jointly at the European level. So he's advocating for a strong union so that it can, in a sense, keep Germany down. That's what he's getting at. He concludes here, if Donald Trump's administration is serious about inducing its European partners to pay their share, it should do everything in its power to support the European project instead of cozying up to those who seek to destroy it. Otherwise, any attempt to make Europeans pay more for defense runs the risk of plunging the continent into conflict. Conflict that was the destructive rule, not the exception, for centuries before the era of Pax Americana. This has been the rule as far as European history is concerned. which is why great leaders of the past, like Winston Churchill, sounded the alarm, asking, are you sure? Are you sure about that? Are you quite sure about it? Because it sure would be a pity to be wrong. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll roll through just a few more news items before we conclude.
Just look into past history. You see if we're going to gain anything by trying to build up the United States of Europe. You see if we're not building a Frankenstein that's going to turn on us and destroy us. Most of you will live to see it. You remember that I told you and that I spoke by the authority of Jesus Christ.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
And welcome back to the program. I just want to go through a few items here about China. Speaking of nations arming themselves for war, there's several pieces here that I've collected over the last couple of days. This first one from nextbigfuture.com, it says, U.S. military technology superiority is challenged as reaching near parity in some capability areas. And it talks about China's technological advancements with respect to its military. China's progress in research and development and its improved military capabilities mean that it is now the single most important driver for U.S. defense developments. The U.S. is having to counter these advances with the Chinese military. It says these systems will be close to parity with similar Western weapons, while one of China's air-to-air missiles has no Western equivalent. One of China's air-to-air missiles. It's the best in the world. China is developing what could be the world's longest-range air-to-air missile. And, of course, you know about what they're doing in the South China Sea. I'll come to that here in just a second. It says here, not only is China producing more advanced systems, it's also starting to sell these abroad. Last year, we noted how Chinese military exports to Africa were moving from the sale of Soviet-era designs to the export of systems designed in China. The trend continues. China is now, however, also beginning to sell more advanced systems. There was a piece in CNN just this week as well about the global arms trade, how that it's hit its highest level since the end of the Cold War. All of these nations exchanging arms, weapons, global arms trade. The trend is upward. The trend for the German army, it's upward. The trend for military spending in Europe, it's upward. The trend for building up the military in Russia, it's upward. It's in Africa, it's in the Middle East, it's everywhere. Except in the United States and Britain. Is that significant? Of course it's significant. Whether you want to concentrate on history alone or on Bible prophecy alone, hopefully it's both. The world is turning into an armed camp right in front of us. Reuters had a piece here, China finishing South China Sea buildings that could house missiles, U.S. officials are concerned. This may be an early test, it brings out, for America's new president, Donald Trump. He's had some strong words for China. China's building 24 structures on their artificial islands. They've got islands all through the South China Sea. And these large structures they're building, evidently they're going to house long-range surface-to-air missiles. That's according to two U.S. officials. So they're preparing for war. And then they're dominating this area of the globe through which, what is it? Like a third of the world's maritime traffic? It goes right through these areas. And China's just laid claim to territories claimed by Brunei, Malaysia, Philippines, Taiwan, Vietnam, all of them. But it doesn't matter to China. They're just helping themselves to that territory. They've taken it over. And that's what's happened. The article says here, Greg Poling, a South China Sea expert at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, said in a December report that China apparently had installed weapons, including anti-aircraft and anti-missile systems, on all seven of the islands it has built in the South China Sea. It's built seven islands in the South China Sea. And these are all military installations, all of them. And now there's some 24 structures being constructed on these artificial islands to house these long-range surface-to-air missiles. That's just Reuters. That's another Reuters report. What a world. What a world. How could anyone look at what's happening, if they're even looking at the news, and conclude, well, there's no way something like World War could ever happen again. There's just no way that that could happen. How could anyone conclude that? Just a simple lesson in history. More importantly, look at what your Bible has to say. It's like Churchill said in the World Crisis. I mean, there were all those organizations set up and built, supposedly to establish peace. The Hague Convention, the liberal principles of Western democracies, Christian charity, you see some of that. And just common sense. Of course nobody's ever going to hit the button. It's just common sense. That's so early 20th century. Now we're in the 21st century. Well, staying on China here for a moment, but switching over to the economic war that's coming. Trade war. This is something we've been preparing you for as well. It factors in to the coming Great Tribulation, significantly, the first chunk of it. Trade war, social unrest, all across our lands. You can read about it in the Ezekiel, the End Time Prophet book. Specifically, those prophecies in Ezekiel 4 and Ezekiel 5. This is from Project Syndicate. It says, There is reason to believe that the U.S. has more to lose. Well, I'm picking it up in the middle of a thought here. Basically, it's saying, given all of the protectionist measures that Donald Trump has vowed to put in place, it was a promise he made throughout the campaign. And as I've brought out to you before on this program, I mean, he stated it confidently, and they're obviously popular positions with his supporters. And he feels like the U.S. is in the power position. Well, this article says there's reason to believe that the U.S. has more to lose than China does if that these two were to go at it in a trade war. If nothing else, the Chinese seem to know precisely which weapons they have available to them. Believe me, they're thinking about it. How they're going to respond. I mean, that's something we've been talking about with you on this show. What Germany's thinking, what Russia's thinking, what they're thinking in Central and South America, what they're thinking in Mexico, what they're thinking in China. This article says, if China switched from Boeing to Airbus, for example, the U.S. would lose some 179,000 jobs. Just one little decision like that. It's not so little, is it? Just one decision like that. If they switch from Boeing to Airbus, we lose 179,000 jobs. This article says, moreover, though the U.S. exports less to China than vice versa, it is China that controls key components in global supply chains and production networks. Well, like one of those components would be the South China Sea. The Seagate. That's another significant Bible prophecy. God says that the United States and Britain would lose control of these passageways. China's just helped themselves. Seven islands. And now they control that area, and they're stockpiling missiles, weapons, all kinds of things on these man-made islands. They're in a stronger position, even with respect to trade, than the Trump administration wants to give them credit for. Though the U.S. exports less to China than vice versa, it's China that controls key components in global supply chains and production networks. That's from Project Syndicate. China's weapons of trade war, going back to the Trump administration and these protectionist measures. I just wanted to play an exchange for you. This is from the syndicated columnist George Will, the conservative who was quite critical of Donald Trump during the campaign last year. And I forget who he's working for now because he's not with Fox News anymore. In any event, he's having this exchange on MSNBC with a reporter talking about when conservatives in the United States wake up to the fact that these policies, particularly the ones with respect to protectionist measures, what happens when they wake up to find out how much damage these things actually do cause. It's a couple of minutes here, but I think I think he brings up a pretty good point here. This is clip one.
Well, Donald Trump has to perform now. The next thing he has to do is submit a budget. When the budget comes up calling for $1 trillion in infrastructure spending, a tax cut that will lose by a bipartisan assessment $5.8 trillion over a decade, plus an increased military spending, plus protectionism, which means government deciding what Americans can consume at what prices and in what quantities, what's called economic planning and crony capitalism and all the rest. When that budget comes up, people are either going to rediscover their conservative convictions, or there's going to be a banquet, a feast of people eating words they've spoken for 30 years. I'll tell you who to watch. Watch Congressman Meadows from North Carolina. He's the head of the Freedom Caucus. The Freedom Caucus represents, to paraphrase what Howard Dean said when he represented the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, they represent the Republican wing of the Republican Party. These are the true blue conservatives, and I think you're going to find that at that point, conservatism begins to rediscover itself.
So would it be the $9 trillion increase in the national debt that is right there in the budget documents that they've already filed? Is that is that the thing we're going to be hearing about the most?
Well, that'll get your attention, certainly.
Yeah.
But it is, again, I think when they realize all that you embrace when you embrace protectionism, enormous executive discretion, government planning, essentially, what we can consume and how the economy will work and who shall be winners and who shall be losers, when they realize the slippery slope they're on, away from bedrock conservative principles, I think things will change by midsummer.
That's George Will on a recent exchange he had on MSNBC, and what he says there about whether or not true blue conservatives are going to wake up to what's happening by midsummer. That's not necessarily the point I wanted to focus in on. But what he says there at the start, and how that now he has to perform. I mean, there's obviously all the cheerleaders on the one side in the United States, and then of course there's the other side that absolutely despises the new U.S. president. But what about when, I mean, this is no longer a campaign. We're a month into it, and there's been the back and forth, and there's been some actions, and some could say that maybe there hasn't really, if you look at the bottom line, there hasn't been a whole lot of action, certainly nothing to be all twisted over, like so many are. But when he has to submit the budget, and when that budget comes up calling for $1 trillion to go on infrastructure spending. And when, if he follows through on a tax cut that could cost the U.S. government trillions more, and then pay for more military spending, and then all of these protectionist measures, protectionism, and then how countries respond to that, and how it impacts even the average American citizen when these tariffs are slapped onto all of the imports coming into the United States. In other words, I mean, lots and lots and lots of the promises that Donald Trump is making, they're not unlike what Barack Obama made and what George W. Bush made, and it's the reason why you see this sky-high national debt. It's just out of control. And so going back to that China article, I mean, look at the position that the United States is in. And there's pretty good reason to believe that the United States has a lot to lose here. And China, and particularly when you add the fact that prophecy says China, along with all these other nations of the world, they're going to gang up on the United States. That's what's coming for the United States. So whether or not conservatives, so-called conservatives, wake up to what's happening or not, I mean, it is what it is. The Jeroboam type is on the scene. And all of these prophecies are coming together in fulfillment, seemingly at once, with what's happening in Europe, in Russia, in China, in the Middle East. We'll have to focus more on the Middle East, by the way, in some coming programs, because as we know, we don't want to overlook Jerusalem and what's happening around there. I'm sure Brent Noctegal has kept us posted on that with his program and with his comments and such on Trumpet Hour. But still, that's the hot spot. That's the powder keg. The Bible says we've got to watch Jerusalem. In any event, so much to talk about with each show. I had another segment here, but we only have about 4 minutes left, so rather than head off to a quick promo, I'll just conclude a little bit early, but go through, I think I've got two or three letters here to finish off from a list that I went through a few days ago. These are letters that have come in response to our television program here in the UK. This one here from York in the UK says, I've read Herbert Armstrong's book, Mystery of the Ages, which I found fascinating and liberating. Very serious and not a little frightening. Could you please send me the free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy? I'm very excited to read this. Thank you for your time spent on my request and for the work you're doing in order to herald in the new way and to help those like myself who are on the fringes of society and very much alone in my faith. Another one here from Cookstown, Northern Ireland. It says, to all the folks at Edstone doing God's work, you're doing a great job. The work of warning the world of what's to come must continue as world events get more tumultuous. And he mentions that we're in his prayers. Another one here from the Republic of Ireland. It says, finally, please accept this offering with my best wishes and kind regards. As you know, I've studied your literature and wish to support your work in spreading the one true gospel of Jesus Christ, our Lord. May God guide you and help you and your associates with this vitally important work. The one true gospel going out. We just completed a program, by the way. I might use some of the content on radio tomorrow about that early history of God's church, specifically there in the city of Rome, that great Gentile city of the first century, the seat of government in the Roman Empire, and also for the great Roman church. And as I discuss on that program, Paul and so many of the others in the first century had to counteract that influence, that pagan influence coming from Simon Magus and his cohorts. And in any event, it's always, from the first century on through to today, it's always a struggle to spread the true gospel when you consider how many of Satan's ministers and their assistants and so on, and how widespread that network is to circulate false gospel and the false gospels and the false teachings of traditional Christian churches that don't really stick to the Bible at all. In any event, that's a listener that, or rather a viewer, that's very excited about God's work, God's church, spreading the true gospel of Jesus Christ. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.